Gary, of course, former tight end for the Cleveland Browns and the Carolina Panthers.
You know, you can listen to The Fan anytime, anywhere on the free Odyssey app or by telling your smart speaker to play 92.3 The Fan. And now you can find 92.3 The Fan on YouTube. Subscribe to our channel and watch all of the best content from your favorite shows on The Fan each and every weekday.
We go to the fan hotline. We're happy to say that Gary is kind of scoping out the Jacksonville Jaguars for the Browns because the Browns have that first-round pick next year. So, Gary, we appreciate all the reconnaissance on your part. Well done. Thank you very much. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Gary.
Oh, no problem. Thank you all for having me.
Tell me the Jaguars are going to stink, would you?
It will be definitely interesting to see how they do. If all hinges on how Trevor Lawrence plays.
Yeah, that's a gamble on the Browns part all the way around. Before we get to some other things, Browns trade with the Jags. Travis Hunter goes to Jacksonville, probably would have come to Cleveland. What do you think of that whole situation, and what do you think of Trevor Lawrence and their possibilities of not being bad this year because Browns get that pick next year?
Yeah, so I don't hate it just because I felt like they had bigger needs, and it also gives you more draft capital for next year. Even if this year is not as successful as they had hoped, they're preparing for next year to prepare for everything. So I'm not against it. I personally wasn't a fan of who they drafted in the first anyways, but I also was not as high on Travis Hunter as everybody else is because I don't think he's a two-way guy. But time will tell. I think it's going to be really hard for anybody to play two ways, and that was the reason why he was drafted so high was the two-way aspect.
You like him a receiver or DB?
I actually think he's a better DB, but I know they're really going to push him towards receiver because he has that ability. But as a DB, he was so much better in Colorado than he was at wide receiver. Wide receiver, he made plays once he got the ball in his hand, but at DB, he was locking people down. And it's hard to find a lockdown corner. It's easier to find somebody that can contribute at receiver.
All right, when you're not a quarterback in a camp like Browns camp, where they have four quarterbacks trying to win this job, and actually they brought in a fifth this week, just your thoughts on the quarterback situation here in Cleveland and how you think this is going to shake out. And you know what? More than that, I just want
Gary, of course, former tight end for the Cleveland Browns and the Carolina Panthers.
You know, you can listen to The Fan anytime, anywhere on the free Odyssey app or by telling your smart speaker to play 92.3 The Fan. And now you can find 92.3 The Fan on YouTube. Subscribe to our channel and watch all of the best content from your favorite shows on The Fan each and every weekday.
We go to the fan hotline. We're happy to say that Gary is kind of scoping out the Jacksonville Jaguars for the Browns because the Browns have that first-round pick next year. So, Gary, we appreciate all the reconnaissance on your part. Well done. Thank you very much. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Gary.
Oh, no problem. Thank you all for having me.
Tell me the Jaguars are going to stink, would you?
It will be definitely interesting to see how they do. If all hinges on how Trevor Lawrence plays.
Yeah, that's a gamble on the Browns part all the way around. Before we get to some other things, Browns trade with the Jags. Travis Hunter goes to Jacksonville, probably would have come to Cleveland. What do you think of that whole situation, and what do you think of Trevor Lawrence and their possibilities of not being bad this year because Browns get that pick next year?
Yeah, so I don't hate it just because I felt like they had bigger needs, and it also gives you more draft capital for next year. Even if this year is not as successful as they had hoped, they're preparing for next year to prepare for everything. So I'm not against it. I personally wasn't a fan of who they drafted in the first anyways, but I also was not as high on Travis Hunter as everybody else is because I don't think he's a two-way guy. Time will tell. I think it's going to be really hard for anybody to play two ways, and that was the reason why he was drafted so high was the two-way aspect.
You like him a receiver or DB?
I actually think he's a better DB, but I know they're really going to push him towards receiver because he has that ability. But as a DB, he was so much better in Colorado than he was at wide receiver. Wide receiver, he made plays once he got the ball in his hand, but at DB, he was locking people down. And it's hard to find a lockdown corner. It's easier to find somebody that can contribute at receiver.
All right, when you're not a quarterback in a camp like Browns camp, where they have four quarterbacks trying to win this job, and actually they brought in a fifth this week, just your thoughts on the quarterback situation here in Cleveland and how you think this is going to shake out. And you know what? More than that, I just want to know, what's it like to be a tight end or somebody who's a part of the offense while you're watching multiple guys get reps?
Well, as a tight end, I don't think it's that difficult because you got to get a rapport with everybody because there's situation. It's going to be interesting. I think Joe Flacco is the start. ideal. I know people are clamoring for one of the rookies, but let me remind everybody of what happened when you were last time everybody was clamoring for a rookie. Everybody wanted Johnny Manziel to play. No fault of Johnny because he was not ready. He should not have played his first year. He should have sat the whole year. But other people had that decision to put him in, and the fans were clamoring for him, and we didn't win another game the rest of the year. So just got to remember that, hold back. Some of these players need to develop. They need time. They can't just come in and start right away. There's limited guys that can do that. And I think Joe Flacco is a good guy to have as the leader for the time being.
Hey, can you help me notice a rookie mistake compared to like a regular game mistake? Is there a way, like, what do rookies do more often than a veteran would do that kind of says, oh man, we got to fix this if you're a veteran?
I think missing protection calls. That's okay. Probably one of the toughest ones because defenses are going to disguise themselves, and you got to be prepared to see what the disguise and, hey, that they're trying to trick you, and you got to make the right protection call. Otherwise, you're getting strip sacked or the line sliding the wrong way, and I think that happens more with rookie quarterbacks than veteran quarterbacks.
Interesting.
Gary Barnidge joining us, former tight end for the Browns. You mentioned what you went through here. Correct me if I miss anything. Your first year with Chud, Jason Campbell, Brandon Whedon, Brian Hoyer, they all played. Next year, Mike Pettine, Hoyer, and Johnny Manziel, who you mentioned. The next year with Pettine, Josh McCown, Johnny Manziel, you had a great year. That's when you had your 1,000-yard season. And then with Hugh Jackson, you had Cody Kessler and Josh McCown. How challenging is that to go through that many guys in that short a period of time?
Yeah, and then you're still leaving out guys that had spot starts because of injury.
Exactly. So. Those were the main guys those years.
Yeah. So I would say it's just in practice. You got to get the practice reps. You got to do the extra you can with each guy because you just never know, especially if you have an open quarterback competition. You got to be able to get reps with everybody. You can't just be satisfied with, oh, I'm just good with this guy because he's going to be the guy. Who knows, week one, the guy that's the starter right then could go down, and you got to be ready for two or three coming up. So you always got to be prepared for everybody. And I think it's just doing more in practices you can with them, seeing how their balls are, catching the ball from all of them, whether it's, hey, after practice or before practice, just catching their ball thrown to you, because you may not get them when you're running reps with the ones, twos, or threes. So you need to find out how they throw the ball and how it all works, especially the different arm styles and how it all works. So it's a big difference just preparing yourself through practice.
What does that uncertainty, Gary, do for the rest of the team? You know, right now during training camp, especially when you were in Carolina, you were locked in. You had Jake Delhomme, you knew he was going to be the guy. Then you had Jimmy Clausen, you knew he'd be the guy. You knew Cam Newton was going to be the guy your last year there. That was pretty clear for everybody. In Cleveland, it wasn't. What does that uncertainty do, good, bad, whatever, to a team during training camp?
So I actually think it brings the other position groups closer together because they're like, hey, we don't know how it's going to shape out at the quarterback, so we need to make sure if it falls on us, we make them right. And I think that's a testament to how Joe Thomas was, because like when Johnny came in, for example, Johnny didn't know some of the plays because he just wasn't ready. So Joe or myself, we had to make the calls that were being called in because he might mess up the call, so correcting it. So it's just more of the rest of the position groups take ownership and they make sure, hey, we can make the quarterback right. I think that's – so it actually brings the team closer together. And the team probably already knows who's going to be the guy. It's just not going to be released to everybody else. The players usually can see in practice, this is going to be the guy, this is who it's going to be, and they've already built around him.
I'm just listening to what you're saying, and I'm flashing back to your playing days. So what was it like? What was it like going from Hoyer to Manziel?
So it was. So Hoyer, he had a command of the system. He knew what he was doing. The thing with Johnny is Johnny just wasn't ready yet. He wasn't prepared to be a pro yet. He needed to sit the whole year and learn what it meant to be a pro and be in professional football. Mm-hmm. And he was just thrust into it. And he was not ready at all. So it's just trying to correct the mistakes that he may make or call the wrong plays. It's just correcting that and making sure limit as many mistakes as we can as the rest of the team or the unit on offense, whether it's O-line. Hey, we started making protection calls and stuff like that versus putting it on him. So taking less off his plate to let him focus on what he does. So I think that's what it all focused around, was just the team building around them.
Yeah, you don't have to answer this. I'm telling you what I'm thinking. Like, I can't imagine how you could lose. I would have lost confidence in the coaching staff if, or the front office or the team itself in that situation, if you had a quarterback that knew what they were doing and then you brought in somebody. You don't need to answer that. I don't want to put you on the spot and throw fire on the guys that can't defend themselves. Fair? Is that fair for me to say? I don't want you to answer it.
I also don't have a problem answering if you want me to.
Oh, go ahead and answer it then. I'd love to. I don't want to put you in a bad spot.
It will also, I don't think any of it was on the coaching staff. There's a reason why coaches left after that year.
True.
As their hands were tied. It came from other people outside the coaching staff. Their hands were tied. And you saw Kyle Shanahan leave. Kyle Shanahan could have possibly been the future head coach of the Cleveland Browns, but he forced to play him. So things like that changed, and he got out. Same with other coaches. Things, all that happened because outside of the coach's control.
Good answer. Thanks, Gary. All right.
Gary, had things been handled differently with Johnny Manziel, and he was able to do what you said, sit for a year, learn, be ready to go, do you think he had the football talent where he actually could have succeeded in the NFL?
I do think he had the talent. It's just whether he would have applied himself the following year is the biggest question. And I think he would have bought in after he realized, hey, I'm not playing this year. I think it would have took him a year because I think he would have saw, oh, well, I can't just do what I was doing before. And he could have, and all that stuff. But I think when he was given the starter job, he's like, oh, I can just keep doing what I always do. It doesn't matter what I do. I'm not going to get punished for it. So I think things like that is what was contributed to his downfall. I just think Johnny had the potential and had the ability. I just think he was thrust into it before he was ready.
Tons of hype when Johnny came in. Tons of hype with Shedeur Sanders here now with the Browns. Different kind of hype. It's a different kind of hype. If you were to advise the Browns, what should you do with Sanders this year? What would you do?
So honestly, I think realistically, if Joe Flacco stays healthy, he's your starter all year. You let Sanders and you let Gabriel sit and learn, and then next year if you want one of those two to be the guy, you let them battle out, and then training camp will make the decision. Because I think that's that they're not, I don't think either one of them are probably ready to be the guy yet. Again, we won't know until we start seeing them in game action, but Flacco has been proven he can be a game manager. And plus, I think the Browns, they want to get back to the ground and pound. They want to do that. That sets up the pass. I don't think they want to be pass heavy. That's not the mantra of Cleveland. So I think they're going to get back to grounding and pounding, and that will set up the pass. So I think that builds right into the type of player Joe Flacco is right now. So I think it actually will work out better, and they can learn from the veteran, and it'll help them improve throughout the year.
Gary, where do you see Kenny Pickett fitting in, if at all?
So that's a tough one because they traded for Kenny Pickett. So I could see them either taking Kenny Pickett or Gabriel or even Sanders, because all of them have been dealing with injuries, throwing one of them on the short-term IR, so they don't have to worry about it right now.
All right, here's a wheelhouse.
That happening.
Yep. Sorry, go ahead. Got to be injured, though.
Yeah.
In theory.
Yeah, so I think that's what they would – if they want him, Kenny Pickett, I think that's what they'll probably do. Or they may throw one of the rookies on there just so they don't have to cut him at this moment to make that decision to see more practice, because you can't carry four quarterbacks. So I don't, and if you traded for one, you signed Joe Flacco, so those two, you would think, and then you drafted two guys who usually don't get cut. So they did put themselves in a predicament. I do think at some point one of them will get put on short-term IR versus somebody getting cut.
Hmm. Gary, it looks like that Kevin wants to go back to that ground-and-pound offense that you just talked about. Harold Fannin Jr. is a tight end they brought in from Bowling Green, and then David Njoku. Just your thoughts about how a two tight end offense could benefit either Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel, or Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah, so I love the two tight end because you never know, especially if they both can catch the ball, because at any point they can block or at any point they can release for a route, so you can't really focus on it, and then it brings you that extra oomph you want to the run game having two tight ends. So, and I actually really like the tight end from Bowling. I loved him. I love the guy they drafted. I thought he did a great job in college. I thought he was I thought he was undervalued in the draft, because I thought the type of player he is, he has the ability to be a really good tight end in the league.
When a team is not expected to do much, what's a team do to overcome that, Gary? Because, boy, Browns have been, I mean, their win-loss total is way down there. Nobody expects them to do a whole lot this year.
Yeah, so that's when it falls on the locker room. The locker room around themselves and say, hey, we can't listen to the outside noise people may not have us doing well, but there's multiple examples of other teams having the same thing, and then they outshine what they were projected, and they can do well. Do I think they're a Super Bowl team this year? No. But do I think they have a chance to do better than what everybody thinks? Yes. It's all just the team buying in and building around each other, and whoever the quarterback is, just doing everything they can to uplift them.
Great to have you with us again, Gary. And by all means, keep an eye on Jacksonville for us. We want about 3 wins out of the Jags, okay?
Yeah, will do.
Yeah, Garrett, we haven't seen a movie since you left because since you were nice enough to rent out the theater for everybody when you were here. I just want you to know that.
Yeah, I felt like I was a victim right there.
You were.
I was victimized. Andy asking a tight end about the value of tight ends.
Nothing wrong with that. Like it.
Hell becomes reality.
You know, Jeff, my friend, you know, you can get the latest from Browns training camp right now on our YouTube channel. Daryl Ryder recaps each and every practice and features the best highlights from coaches and players during media availability as well as on the field action. Subscribe to 92.3 The Fan, the 92.3 The Fan channel. Now on YouTube, get all of the latest from Daryl Ryder on the Browns throughout the football season.
So Gary basically said ownership forced Johnny Manziel down everybody's throat.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I tried. I didn't want him to.
We'll cut through it. That's what he said.
Yeah. Right? I didn't want to.
And Kyle Shanahan left because of it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. He gave us the straight up answer.
Well, he gave us the good version. We gave you the Cliff Notes.
Yeah.
Ownership shoved Johnny Manziel down the coaching staff's throat. There you go.
Well, he could have been front office, too.
Could have been.
Yeah, so it's either ownership or front office. It was not the... He made it very clear it was not the coaching staff.
Someone who sits in a suite.
All right, we'll give you that one.
Yeah,
we'll give you that one. He also thought that had Johnny been forced to sit for a year, it might have been different. I thought that was interesting. But he said because Johnny was thrown out on the field and, hey, I'm starting, I guess everything's okay. I guess this is all right.
That's the second time in 2 days. Like, I heard the whole Joe Thomas story about how he was calling the line plays. And then, you know, to hear Gary say he was also helping out calling plays. Well, I mean, imagine going into that huddle.
Well,
that's a comedy show.
So we all know that this went south in a hurry. So I'm not trying to, like, back anything up when I say this. That's not totally uncommon. Like Jason Kelce was notorious for doing offensive line sets while Jalen Hurts was playing quarterback.
The line guys kind of control the line,
right?
Yeah.
Some you'll hear that quite often. But the quarterback better know coverages.
Yes and no. I agree with you that, but he made it pretty clear that Johnny didn't know the plays, and Johnny said that since then he didn't know the plays, didn't look at the playbook.
Is that frowned upon?
That's right. Not good to be an NFL quarterback.
I am not saying these things to justify Johnny Manziel or the way things went about it. This is a common occurrence. Yes.
Yeah, okay. That's fair then. We'll leave it at that. How's that sound? I don't feel like going back down that road. Do you?
Nope. I also thought it was interesting that Gary said the quarterback competition kind of brings the other guys together. Kind of sharpens them all up. You know, they bond together, make sure they know their stuff so that they can help the quarterback a little bit. Well, if that's the case, by golly, the other position groups are getting tight right now in Berea.
Oh, man. Are you kidding? They are doing Mensa meetings in all the rooms.
You know, Gary immediately says Joe Flacco and starting all year. And you keep the rookies because you drafted them. You know, maybe Kenny Pickett is the odd guy out here. You know, In that scenario, he is. I'm hard pressed to think, depending on what your ultimate goal is for this season, there's my caveat, that you would go into the season with Joe Flacco, 40-year-old Joe Flacco. The key here is 40-year-old anybody as your starting quarterback and two rookies who were third and fifth round picks as your backups. That doesn't sound like the recipe for success. Not that there is one with this team, you know, playoff type team. I don't know if there is one for that. But a 40-year-old quarterback and two rookies who are not a first or even second round pick doesn't sound like a recipe for success.
I agree with that.
That makes me think Pickett's got a role.
I'm hesitant to do this, but I'm going to do this anyways. One of the main topics on the morning show this this morning was kind of the road you're walking down right now. What is the goal of the season? Is the goal to see what you have, or is the goal to win?
Dana, what's the goal for the season, please?
To find out if the quarterback on the Browns for 2026 is on the roster or in the draft.
Does winning mean anything?
Very little, because you're probably not going to make the playoffs.
Does winning mean anything, Dan?
Nope.
I say you win till you don't. And maybe that's what it means for Flacco, right? So if Flacco's a quarterback, you put him out there and he's winning, stick with it. Let's see what happens. If they start going sideways, then I think it turns a few weeks into the season, probably six, right after the Steelers game in Pittsburgh, which is where's the bye? I forgot. It's in the middle, isn't it? So
it's in the middle of the season.
Yeah, and it might even be before the bye, where you make that hard decision. You're like, okay, we're this and that, and you know what? Let's see what we got. Let's do this. I'm not ready to and maybe that's my overall thought on this, because I can't stand the thought of, you know, going out there, throwing the rookies out week one and knowing that you're playing to lose. Like that, I can't swallow that. Start the season. We all know it's tough. First six games are going to be tough. Put Flacco out there. Put Pickett out there. If you know, either way, play to win. Play to win, you know, in the beginning of the season. Because your head coach's job is on the line. You're coming off a three-win year. I don't care what they say. Oh, he's in. He's solid. He's rock solid. Really? Are you really rock solid? What if there's another coach out there that's like suddenly looking for a job and you feel like you can get him? And you might like him better than Kevin Stefanski. I'm not saying that that's the way it is, but we all know that's the way it is in the NFL. Play to win in the beginning and then see what happens. I think that's a fair way to look at it.
I think it is too. With Dan's thought in mind, and I think Dan's thought is right, discover if your quarterback of the future, or at least your quarterback of the next year or three, is on the team right now. And if he's not, going the next year. Interesting, Jimmy Haslam, when Jimmy and D. Haslam spoke to the media, and he was asked about Arch Manning, the Texas quarterback.
Yeah.
Jimmy said, if you'll recall, yeah, I believe he basically said, don't think he's coming out in 2026.
Yeah.
He said, and I thought, oh.
I've heard that before.
I've heard that before too, but I've never heard it from the owner of the team. And I thought that's a bold statement for the owner to make, because maybe he knows something. In Texas Monthly Magazine.
Oh, we all read that.
You should.
Oh, man.
It's a fine publication.
Except for the staple in the middle. That bothers me sometimes. But
they don't do staples anymore.
Texas Monthly does, because they do everything bigger and better in Texas.
Well, then that means you don't need a staple.
Now, they don't like the heat glue stuff. Doesn't work right.
They did a great big feature on Arch Manning, the Texas Longhorns quarterback. And, of course, he's everybody's number one thought about quarterbacks in college football in 2026. But they interviewed a bunch of people about him, including his grandfather, Archie Manning. Hmm. And, you know, the namesake of Rick Manning.
That's not true, but okay, keep going.
And he said that Archie said he hasn't discussed it with Arch, but he says he knows his grandson well enough to know what he will do. Quote, Arch isn't going to do that. He'll be at Texas. When asked about the 2026 draft, Arch isn't going to do that. He'll be at Texas. So cross him off the list.
Let's see. His valuation is at $6.6 million right now.
Yep.
$6.6 million as a college quarterback. So he's on a 2-year, at least $12 million deal.
I don't know if that's the...
If that's what he wants to be on.
I don't know if that's the big thing here. Do you?
Be for me.
Well, but that's you. You'll do anything for a buck.
So will you, Jeff.
Exactly right.
Yes.
I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Okay, good. We're just glad you...
But, you know, he's a Manning. Cooper actually is his father, and Cooper's done well in business. Guessing Coop has a little cash.
Coop wasn't a bad football player. He just had spinal stenosis.
Yeah. He was forced to retire because he could have ended up paralyzed.
Yeah, that's a wise move. I'm going to go.
Here's another part of
paralyzed
this.
Paralyzed or a lot of paralyzed.
When Arch was looking for a college, his final three, and remember, Eli and Grandpa went to Ole Miss and Uncle Peyton went to Tennessee.
It was close at Ohio State. I don't know if you remember those days.
Well, but he
was
close to coming to Ohio State. His final three were Alabama, Georgia, and Texas. And he, according to the same Texas Monthly story, he was given advice from his father, Cooper. And, you know, it's interesting because you don't think of Cooper as the football guy in that family, even though he really was.
Cooper's been on our show before.
He got hurt, yeah.
Yeah, remember?
Yeah, Cooper was great. Mm-hmm. And he said, and Cooper said this, let's find a school that you want to go to if something happens and you don't play football. Because that's what happened to Cooper.
Right.
And, you know, he said,
shouldn't that be true of every athlete?
Well, it should, but you know it isn't. You know it isn't. He said, go to a place where you'll be happy. To a place where even if you didn't play it down, you'd still enjoy your college experience, have a little bit of balance, have friends who aren't just on the team, friends who are in frats and clubs and everything else. And he did, and that's why he picked Texas.
Good for him, and good for those fraternities that made sure he had a good time while he was down there.
Sure he did.
Sure they had fun.
And his younger brother actually goes to Texas too now.
Well, so now you got the whole family there.
Younger brother's name is Hyde. H-E-I-D.
Hyde Manning?
Hyde Manning.
It's kind of a rodeo name, isn't it?
I don't know. Bob's in Akron. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Gentlemen, I'm looking to you to help me rationally. I heard earlier about how the Browns were the 32nd team in the league.
According to power rankings from Eric Edholm.
Yeah, okay. So, now, that means, in my mind anyway, my thoughts are that either means that they think the Browns have got the worst personnel of any team in the league, or that they have close to the worst coaching in the league. So, is the problem the talent that Andrew Berry has been able to put on the table? Because if I was Stefanski and I kept getting bum players, I'd be going to the owner saying, hey, we need to have a new GM. Or if I was Andrew Berry and I thought I was providing good material, then I'd be saying, hey, owner, we need to have a new coach. So, you know, I mean, how do we apportion the blame?
That's a good question, isn't it?
Well, when you're all a part of the thought partner group, as they are,
Paul's an incredible thought partner,
then they all think along the same lines, I guess.
The coach can't acquire the talent.
And I think the talent got stifled because we traded away three first-round picks, and the quarterback they got in turn for that isn't on the field. So if you ask me, that's talent-related.
Though first round picks are huge, no question about it. There's a lack of talent on this roster that shouldn't be for the sixth year of a regime, my estimation. It's Baskin and Phelps here on the Fan.